we start to pathologize individuals because we fail to examine the overall structures or systems that are impacting one's behavior. You know, research has shown that the impact of racial trauma increases depression, anxiety, and even PTSD among many Black communities.
Hi, this is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, and you are listening to Into the Fold, the Hogg Foundation podcast. The Hogg Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more about the Hogg Foundation, our history, and our programs, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. As ever, Hogg is spelled H-O-G-G. I am coming to you from the third annual Black Student Athletes Summit on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin. The summits began in 2015 under the direction of the university's Division of Diversity and Community Engagement. The theme for this year's event is the Black Student Athlete in the Age of Black Lives Matter. The three-day event brings together thinkers from across a range of disciplines to discuss the social and cultural implications for Black student athletes. In recent years, African American athletes have become more visible and outspoken on mental health issues. Some recent examples are Brandon Marshall, a star wide receiver in the NFL, who was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder in 2011, and co-founded Project 375 to raise awareness around mental health, combat stigma, and raise money for treatment. Royce White, who struggles with anxiety disorders, cut short a promising NBA career, and who has been openly critical of the NBA's lack of a comprehensive mental health policy. And then there's Imani Boyed, who once starred for the University of Texas women's basketball team and now currently plays for the Chicago Sky of the WNBA, and who struggles with depression, including multiple suicide attempts. Have been pretty well documented. So here at the Black Student Athletes Summit, I caught up with two scholars who are by turns humane and provocative on the mental health vulnerabilities faced by Black student athletes. Caroline Brackett, an associate professor of counseling at Penfield College of Mercer University in Atlanta, and Ryan Sutton, a postdoctoral fellow for the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health at the Division of Diversity and Community Engagement at UT Austin. And so, without further ado, our first guest, Dr. Brackett, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, from your experience as a licensed counselor, what makes reaching Black student athletes any more of a challenge than reaching students in general?
A couple of things. I think one of the things that we see in research is that students say that they don't have enough time. Too many athletic obligations, too many academic obligations, too many social obligations. But when you tie in the race factor with that, especially in the African American community, there's a stigma that's associated with counseling and seeking help. And oftentimes that's something that you don't see many African Americans running to do. Oftentimes, issues are dealt with in the church or in the family and not necessarily going outside of the home to address.
There's a lot of discourse these days around entitlement and how ours is supposedly a culture of entitlement. And the two groups who are especially vulnerable to this criticism, because it's often a criticism, are college students and athletes. And we even see it in the workplace. And people can be reluctant to seek help because that can be seen as entitled, an entitled thing to do. And do you see this issue with Black student athletes as well?
I'm, I don't know if I see it as much of an issue related to the entitlement factor as I do to if I go, I'm going to be seen as weak or there's something wrong with me. But one of the things that I think can be done to address either of those is that seeking help needs to be looked at more as this is something that you're doing to help yourself and then ultimately reach some of the goals that you have. And so I think a lot more education needs to be done related to mental health issues and what seeking help can do for you and what counselors can do so that people don't feel that I'm going to be judged for doing it. And so the same way that we look at health issues, we need to look at the medical health issues. We need to look at the mental health issues that way. And I think that more education and awareness around the benefits would address some of those problems.
Okay. And so you've intimated to me that that much of your work is with African-American men.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you have ever noticed about how African-American women approach mental health issues versus African-American men?
Right. And let me just clarify, the work with the student athletes has been African-American men.
Right.
But in general, a variety, race and gender. But I do think that African-American females are more willing to seek help. I think that that's just part of the culture of being a female. It's more accepting to be able to go to a counselor to seek help for mental health services. Women are much more verbal by nature, and they're used to talking about issues or problems that happen with them. With males, maybe not as much because of sort of this gender stereotype of men, you keep things inside, you're strong. Talking about issues and emotions may be seen as more weak, and that's something that men don't do. And if you can't handle it, you're not strong mentally. And if you're not strong mentally as a student athlete, then that means on the field, you're not going to be strong. And so I think that having a different conversation about what it means to seek help. And, you know, even if you have to use a metaphor and relating it to what they do on the field, if they're not performing well, you know, they go and they talk to the coaches and they get more strategies. And so it's the same thing with mental health. If you're not doing well with your mental health, seeking a coach or a counselor and getting strategies that will help you to cope would be something that would help you with meeting outcomes in your personal life that you want to meet.
Okay. So we shouldn't assume that athletes are only examples of what not to do. And are there any ways in which Black student athletes tackle their issues, whether it's with the guidance of a counselor or not,
mm-hmm.
That are adaptive and that we might be able to learn from?
Yeah, I think that is very important because oftentimes media, we want to focus on what's going wrong and what someone did. But I think with athletes, student athletes learn a lot about life on the field. And I think that it's important to help them to recognize that and how they can transfer what they learn on the field, off the field. And so outside of athletes who give back to their communities, do things for causes that are important to them, they also can speak to individuals about resiliency. And when you go into a game, someone's going to win and someone's going to lose, but athletes play that game anyway. And so I think working with them to help them recognize that you're learning some leadership skills and some resiliency skills on the field that can transfer off the field. You hear about athletes who are visiting individuals in hospitals and talking to them and supporting them and doing things like that. People who give back to causes, and that's happening all the time. And so I think that we don't hear enough of those stories, but also we need to encourage the things that they're doing well so that they recognize that in themselves.
Okay. One thing that I sometimes think about, and as a consumer of sports media, is whenever it is that I see an African-American athlete behaving mm-hmm. in an outrageous way,
even when it seems to be calculated.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes wonder, and I hope I'm not alone, that at least in some cases it's a coping technique. And are there ways that we can sort of distinguish or kind of discover when that's the case? And is it something that you've ever kind of encountered?
It's interesting. In counseling, I've had clients say to me, can I be honest with you? Which leads me to believe that sometimes they can't be themselves out in the real world because there's an expectation of them. And even as a high school counselor, I would have students and student athletes come in, African-American males who were struggling with my father's not in the home. I'm the male of the house, and now my mother has this boyfriend and he expects me to follow his rules, and that's not what I'm supposed to do. And they're crying in my office. But I know that before they leave my office, they need to pull it back together, because when they go out of my office, they need to put back on that face of, I have everything together and I'm this strong black male. And so I respect that. But I also understand that, behind that facade, there's a real person who has feelings, who hurts, who has loss. And so we want to make sure that we're not making judgments about people. Sometimes people are, we live in this society where it's reality everything, and everyone wants to have this fantastic life and this life that people are talking about. So it's not uncommon to find people who are expressing themselves in boisterous ways that may not happen in their everyday life. And so what I would say is, I don't think there's one specific way to tell if someone is putting on a facade, but time tells. And I think it's important to look at, what are they saying and doing, and are there differences there? When you see this person outside of the limelight, do they have a different persona? Do they have a different way that they're saying things and doing things? Sometimes that is a coping mechanism for people. If I put on this image that everyone wants to see, then I can take my time and my attention away from the reality that I don't want to deal with. And then sometimes you have people who are actually experiencing some mental health issues, some personality disorders, and that's their way of coping, or that is a manifestation of their disability or their diagnosis. And it's important to, I think, look at each individual on a case-by-case basis.
Okay. Dr. Caroline Brackett, thank you so much for finding the time to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Next up is Dr. Ryan Sutton, postdoctoral fellow for the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, who came in to our studio to share his thoughts on mental health and black student athletes. Dr. Sutton, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So your educational background is in forensic psychology. And you have spent time working to understand the experience of young black males affected by the criminal justice system. Can you talk about how your education and experience informed your outlook on approaches to understanding and supporting these youth?
Yes. Having the opportunity to focus my research and clinical work around young males of color, particularly black males, I've been fortunate enough to work across various settings, from the school system to community agencies to juvenile justice system. I've watched black males excel in various ways, and I've witnessed black males struggle. However, one thing that I always was conscious of was how institutional structures impact the dynamic between the youth and those in authority, whether they be teachers, counselors, administrators, judges, etc. And realizing that one's behavioral outcomes is not solely based upon that individual, but in the interaction of various systems within a person's life, I believe I gained a better and a deeper understanding of the youth that I worked with. Working in jails, detention centers, juvenile courts, as well as a number of other sites, I was fortunate enough to understand and conceptualize one's behavior in the context of their home life and their community and their school history, their developmental history. This has resulted in me being able to see behavior as a symptom of something greater than just that behavior. Now, when others get caught up in maladaptive behavior that an individual manifests, I believe I'm able to look deeper than that behavior and begin to understand the meaning and significance of that behavior for the individual. And this helps with modifying the behavior in a meaningful and more significant manner that has a more lasting impact for that youth. So when we start to talk about how one's neighborhood or what one was exposed to growing up, how microaggressions and stereotypes or continual exposure to deficit narratives impact one's emotional, psychological, and behavioral functioning, we begin to place that youth behavior into a context that allows for holistic support. And this is not to provide the youth with excuses for maladaptive behavior, but it's to take a realistic and balanced perspective at the situation in order to provide holistic support. Sometimes maladaptive behavior within a maladaptive system is very adaptive.
Okay, you said something just now that I totally get. That's because I think my head is often soaking in the kinds of realities that you just alluded to.
Right.
But I don't know that everybody gets it. So this idea that maladaptive behavior can, in some circumstances, be adaptive. Could you expound on that just a little bit?
I think that when individuals find themselves in situations that are not the most desirable, they'll find ways to cope within those situations, even if those coping mechanisms aren't the healthiest for an individual. So, for instance, drug use sometimes might be a way of coping with a lot of the struggles, difficulties, and obstacles one is continuously facing in life. Even though drug use is not something we want to see for that individual, it becomes a tool. Even though it's maladaptive, it becomes a tool to try to adapt to the circumstances they're around.
Okay. So you've also found yourself doing work related to the experiences of Black student athletes. So what connections have you made about the effects of race on this particular cohort of young Black men?
Right. So what we're talking about is racial traumas in Black males. We're talking about what Sue termed the microaggressions, micro invalidations, micro assaults that are experienced more often than not within the lives of many of our Black males. You know, we have to see it from a historical as well from a current perspective. We're living in a time when being a Black male is seen as being a threat. We're exposed to the unarmed killing of Black men by police officers. Black boys are being disciplined in schools at a much higher rate than their white counterparts. The overrepresentation of Black males in the juvenile and adult justice systems. I think a large portion of the racial trauma is this deficit narrative that is attached to Black males and thereby dictates the way people perceive us, the way people respond to us, the way people interact with us. But this isn't anything new. When we look at things such as the overdiagnosis of behaviorally based mental health disorders like schizophrenia, ADHD, conduct disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, antisocial personality disorder, and Blacks, and the underdiagnosis of affective based disorders, your depression, anxiety, etc., we begin to see how race shapes the manner in which we conceptualize and respond to individuals. Dr. Jonathan Mitzel's book, The Protest Psychosis, he speaks about how schizophrenia went from being a whimsical, non-threatening disorder given to many white housewives to being a violent and aggressive disorder given to many Black men during the periods of protest. We see how race impacted that shift of what schizophrenia looks like and how schizophrenia is diagnosed. In other words, we start to pathologize individuals because we fail to examine the overall structures or systems that are impacting one's behavior. You know, research has shown that the impact of racial trauma increases depression, anxiety, and even PTSD among many Black communities. But when you superimpose this onto the realities of health disparities that also impact our community, you get a look at chronic symptoms that become the norm for an individual or for a community. And this creates a double bind scenario for the individual. You're exposed to repeated racial trauma, therefore you exhibit symptoms of this trauma, increased irritability, difficulty focusing and concentrating, difficulty sleeping, memory impairment. And now because of this and how this impacts your functioning, you're labeled as defiant, lazy, or all these other stereotyped terms. And this is what we talk about with the micro invalidations and micro assaults. So because we experience that, we're kind of further exacerbated in these racial traumas, which then exposes or expands those symptoms we're experiencing. And this is same for Black women, too, when you look at, you know, the angry Black woman and what that does in terms of these microaggressions.
And I guess, and I would assume that if you're talking about athletes in particular, and particularly highly visible athletes.
Yes.
Any of those symptoms that they exhibit, in whatever way they exhibit them, get mercilessly picked apart. And so they and they have to sort of balance, you know, on the one hand, voicing what it is that they're experiencing in a way that rings true to them,
right,
while at the same time mollifying, placating, even more than Black people have to do generally,
right,
for the sake of, you know, if we're talking about big time athletic program like what we have here at UT,
right,
you know, any number of stakeholders, and so I would imagine that everything that you just said is only made more fraught. When that's the case.
You're absolutely right. And I think it further impacts the way that our Black student athletes seek services or do not seek services. You know, this understanding that when we look at the Black student athlete, we have to look at or talk about the stigma that's attached to being a student athlete and the stigma that's attached to being Black. Already as a Black student athlete on many campuses, you're overrepresented in athletics and underrepresented in the general student body, sending the message that I'm only here because of my athletic prowess or my athletic abilities. I'm not here because of my intellect, which shapes the way other students perceive you and respond to you, teachers and professors respond to you and respond to the manifestation of those symptoms that we talked about. So therefore, they typically don't want to bring further undue attention on themselves by seeking help for stigmatized services. There's already mental health stigma in the Black community, although there's plenty of avenues looking to decrease this stigma, even when you look at the work done in Dale pediatric research by Dr. William Lawson, the stigma reduction work being done there. We see that we're trying to mitigate the stigma, but it's still there. You know, this idea of having mental health issues, you know, you're crazy, you're weak, something's wrong with you, is heavy within our community. But when you further couple that with the athletic culture that says you have to be strong and you have to be healthy, you have to fight through it and just walk it off, you get an individual that has been twice reinforced not to seek services.
Okay. The business of sports is fraught. The business of mental health is fraught. We are here talking about how Black student athletes in particular can better handle their business, their own business first, and not other people's.
Yes.
So, Dr. Ryan Sutton, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.